Hello everyone, welcome back to my channel. As always, quick reminder, join my mailing list and find me on Locals. As always, like I say, in case you never know, today I am joined back by Scott Ritter. We all know that he was the United Nations Weapon Inspector and also former United States Marine Corps Intelligence Officer. Always great to connect with you, Scott. I have lots of questions today.
Well, thanks very much for having me, and I'll do my best to answer them to the best of my abilities.
Thank you. So I actually had an order of questions, but now looking at this, what I have at the front of me, I will start from the middle of them. Yesterday, I believe, in Brussels, right, in Belgium, Secretary General of NATO Stoltenberg was, and I listened to this entire speech of his, not easy to listen, but I did. And he mentioned that next week they will start some standard trainings, exercises, as I assume in Poland, probably. And my first question is, will those standard exercises, will they really be standard, or there will be an excuse for something else?
Well, I mean, they're not just standard exercises, they're standard nuclear exercises. This is a training operation designed to exercise NATO's nuclear deterrent. So they will be practicing nuclear war. And from the Russian perspective, NATO can pretend to have a scenario where they are loading nuclear weapons onto nuclear capable aircraft and flying these aircraft in a training exercise, simulating a potential conflict with Russia. But from the Russian perspective, they have to assume that every airplane that takes off is armed with an actual nuclear weapon, and that at any moment NATO could decide to transition from a training exercise to a wartime footing and use these nuclear weapons against Russia. Do I think NATO is going to do that? No. Do I think this is a legitimate, legitimate in quote marks, military exercise? Yes. It's an annual exercise. NATO does this every year. Why would this year be any different? Because NATO is at war with Russia and Ukraine. Wait a minute, Scott, NATO's not at war with Russia. Yes, they are. They just don't want to admit that they're at war with Russia. NATO has been pouring in tens of billions of dollars worth of military resources, turning the Ukrainian military into a de facto proxy of NATO for the sole purpose of killing Russians in large numbers. That's what they want to achieve. That is the NATO objective, the American objective. And the other interesting thing is that Stoltenberg set this exercise up by saying that a Russian victory in Ukraine is a defeat for NATO. That's an interesting statement to be made by an organization that purports not to be involved in this conflict. Why would a Russian victory in Ukraine be a defeat for NATO? And more importantly, I thought Ukraine was winning. Why is the Secretary General of NATO suddenly speaking about a Russian victory in Ukraine? Because propaganda can only carry you so far. And while Ukraine had an impressive run this summer and early fall, meaning the offensives in Kharkiv and in Kherson, any military professional would tell you that that offensive was always going to be limited in terms of its what it could accomplish, and that Ukraine was committing suicide by carrying it out. They were burning through their strategic reserves. And you can see it in the face of Zelensky as he spoke recently. This is a panicked man. And another reason why should we be concerned about these exercises? When you have Zelensky going on national TV begging NATO to carry out preemptive nuclear attacks against Russia to prevent Russia from using nuclear weapons against Ukraine. Now, almost everybody said, no, that's not what we do. We're not going to do that. But you have the Ukrainian president begging for a preemptive nuclear attack by NATO. And now NATO is going to exercise the very resources that would be needed to carry out a preemptive nuclear attack. Why NATO is doing this right now is stupid. You know, it's not a sign of weakness to be smart. It's actually a sign of strength to be smart. The United States has canceled on several occasions tests of its Minuteman III intercontinental ballistic missile because of concern that Russia might misinterpret this test. It wasn't a sign of weakness on the part of the United States. It was a sign of confidence. It was a sign of an assured nation, knowing that it really didn't need to prove anything at this point in time, and it's best not to create the potential for misunderstanding. So we canceled the exercises. NATO should cancel this exercise straight up. Jens Stoltenberg, if you're listening, I'd like to believe he is, but I doubt he is, or somebody on your staff listening, cancel the exercises. Why? Let's go back into history. Able Archer 83 was a NATO command post exercise done at the end of a large military exercise in 1983 known as Reforger, the reinforcement of return of forces to Germany, the big exercise where the United States practices deploying hundreds of thousands of troops to Europe, to Germany in particular, in a very short period of time in case of a Soviet attack. At the end of this exercise, they carried out a command post exercise called Able Archer. Able Archer was testing NATO's ability to launch nuclear weapons in case of a Soviet attack. The Soviets at that time had been on the lookout for any sign that NATO might launch a preemptive nuclear strike. And so the Soviets are concerned about a preemptive nuclear strike. Now NATO's doing this command post exercise where they are realistically testing the launch procedures. And the Soviets said they may actually be preparing to do this, to attack us preemptively. So the Soviets put their nuclear forces on high alert. That means that any misperception, any mistake, any misunderstanding could have responded or resulted in a Soviet preemptive strike of their own, thinking they were under attack. Why do I bring this up? Soviet doctrine or Russian doctrine today does not allow for preemptive use of nuclear weapons. The Russians aren't going to attack first, but their doctrine does allow for the release of nuclear weapons if Russia believes they are under attack. And Russia doesn't have to wait for the nuclear bomb to go off. They just have to be convinced that nuclear weapons are on their way. What happens when Jens Stoltenberg's brilliant NATO idiots decide they're going to do a mass launch of nuclear-capable aircraft to test the procedures? And these planes take off, and God forbid they fly in the direction of Russia. And they're only minutes away. Once they cross the Polish border, they're literally only minutes away. Do the Russians wait for these aircraft to come and drop their B-61 thermonuclear bombs on Russian cities? Or do the Russians say, we fire our missiles, which we put on high alert, and now the world is over? Why? Because Jens Stoltenberg wasn't man enough to say, hey, hit the pause button right now. Now's not a good time to be testing these procedures. Or if we're going to test these procedures, let's not test them in Poland. Let's test them in Spain. Why don't we relocate to Spain, far away from Russia, so Russia could never think that these aircraft are coming to attack them? This is a sign of a panicked organization, NATO, which is looking at the reality on the ground in Ukraine and understanding that they lost the war. It's over. It's all over but the dying. There's going to be a lot more dying ahead of us, but it's over. Ukraine shot its bolt. There's nothing left. Russia is building up its strength. There's going to be a pause for the cause because General Mudd's going to come in. But Russia's never going to stop. Russia's got their foot on the throat of Ukraine. They're going to be taking out the Ukrainian infrastructure. Ukrainians are condemned now for a future of what? Barely third world existence. That's the future of Ukraine. Thank you, NATO. Thank you, United States. Thank you, Jens Stoltenberg. And as a result, the Ukrainian military is going to be slaughtered. Ukrainian civilians are going to suffer and die. The Ukrainian nation will cease to exist. That's the reality that Jens Stoltenberg just woke up to, that our gambit failed. We weren't unable to provide Ukraine with the resources sufficient to turn the tide. And now Ukraine is only going to get weaker. Russia is only going to get stronger. And NATO has nothing left except nuclear weapons. So he's flexing the nuclear muscle, the signal to Russia, don't you dare come into NATO because Article 5 will trigger this massive nuclear response. Russia has no intent of going into NATO. Russia will never invade Poland, will never invade the Baltics. NATO has nothing to worry about except for its own inherent weaknesses and the insecurities that are attached to this. That's what this nuclear exercise is. It's a manifestation of NATO weakness and NATO insecurity. And shame on Jan Stoltenberg for putting the future of the world at risk because he's a scared little crybaby, a little baby boy sitting in the corner with tears coming down his face. He got involved in a game he wasn't prepared to play in. Now he's throwing a temper tantrum. No, this is really, really bad, really, really dangerous. I believe we will get through this. I don't believe Russia's mature. Russia's not a crybaby. Russia's not an insecure little, spoiled brat. Russia's a grown-up, but they're not. We'll see how they respond. I wouldn't be surprised if Russia said, if you guys are going to do this, we got to, based upon the rhetoric that's been going on, because it's not just Zelensky. There's been European leaders that have talked about, the need for a preemptive nuclear strike. Everybody's talking about the use of nuclear weapons. Joe Biden's talking about an Armageddon. So Russia would have every right to say, well, gosh, given all the things that are coming out of the West, we need to put our nuclear forces on high alert because we don't trust you. We simply don't trust you. Maybe Russia's mature enough not to. Maybe Russia will say, we're not going to play this game. We're not going to escalate. We're going to just, let you do your little exercise and we're going to do what we want. But it's dangerous when you talk about nuclear weapons. It's very, very dangerous. It's world-ending kind of danger. And Jan Stoltenberg is showing his immaturity and his irrationality and his irresponsibility as a leader by allowing these exercises to go on.
Thank you. I want to stay here in Poland and borderline with Belarus and the situation in Belarus. Scott, you follow this. What is the approach of certain people in Polish government who are also the puppets? Okay, we all know this. And who are being directed to the certain steps to take. I would like you to tell me how you see this going forward from Polish standpoint and Belarus, Lukashenko, supported by Russia standpoint. What do you think will happen?
Let's understand that the special military operation that began on February 24th would never have occurred without Russia feeling confident in Belarus as an ally. Belarus did not provide troops. They didn't invade. Everybody talked about it, but it didn't happen. The Belarus army remained in Belarus. They allowed their territory to be used to assemble Russian troops who did move into Ukraine. They allowed their airspace to be used by Russian aircraft who fired missiles. But in terms of putting combatants in there, they didn't. Why? Lukashenko made it clear. He has a mission. His mission isn't to invade Ukraine. His mission is to prevent Russia from being stabbed in the back by Poland and the Baltics. That's his mission. And he's been true to his word. He has fulfilled that mission. What has transpired in the meantime? Poland has made a lot of noises about the future of Western Ukraine. There's a lot of talk. Poland has been articulating the need for a no-fly zone, for an expanded international peacekeeping zone, a buffer on the border, et cetera, outright annexation. There's talk, of Poland holding their own referendum to annex this territory. And people say, well, that won't happen so long as there's no Polish troops on the ground. There's thousands of Polish troops on the ground right now in Ukraine, tens of thousands. Entire Polish battalions have been converted into so-called Ukrainian forces, and they're fighting on the front line. The Russians know this. They're finding the bodies. They're slaughtering the Poles. They're slaughtering them. Poles are losing thousands of people. I hope the Polish mothers, sisters, wives understand what's happening to your sons, your husbands, your uncles, your brothers. They're in Ukraine right now being killed. But the danger from the Belarusian standpoint is you don't have to wait for a Polish military force to come across the border. Polish forces are already in Ukraine. And what happens when Poland decides to withdraw these forces from the front line, reposition them into Western Ukraine, and suddenly transform them into Polish troops, or maintain the cover that they're Ukrainian troops, but have them behave like they were Polish troops, occupying strategic zones, strategic areas. You know, Belarus, Lukashenko's not stupid. Neither are the Russians. They know this is happening. That's why in June, Lukashenko made it clear. He said, look, we don't want to invade Ukraine. It's not, you know, we don't want to be part of this special military operation, but we have a job. The job is to prevent Russia from being stabbed in the back. And one, and it's our job is also to protect Belarus, security. And they said, we will never allow Poland to take Western Ukraine. We will never allow ourselves to be surrounded. And that's what would happen. Poland would come in and Ukraine would be feel surrounded. A pocket, the Baltics, Poland, now Western Ukraine. They said, it's just not going to happen. We will be prepared to take action. And we are going to get into a very dangerous period where the Ukrainian military is going to collapse in the east. It's just a matter of time. They're already defeated. They're going to collapse. And when they collapse, what's going to happen to the Polish troops? They're going to withdraw. There's a danger that more Ukrainian formations will be transferred over into Western Ukraine. Polish units, Polish equipment, repainted in Ukrainian colors, nice little blue and gold flag sewn on the, see, but they're Polish soldiers. They speak Polish. They're commanded by Polish officers, and they'll come in. And if that happens, then Belarus, supported by Russia, will seize Western Ukraine. They will seize it. And when that happens, it's a question now, what does Poland do? Because they've been called out. There's going to be Polish troops dying. Does Poland reinforce with real Polish troops? Do they declare an Article 4 emergency and ask for NATO intervention? And now what, Germany sends troops into Poland? I mean, that's always a bad idea to have German troops go anywhere. They should never leave German soil. What is Russia? Russia's not playing games anymore. It's over for Ukraine. It is over. And Russia's not going to sit back and let Western Ukraine fall into anybody's hands. Russia is committed to a policy of denazification. And denazification means purging Western Ukraine of the political ideology and the political parties and the political mechanisms of people loyal to Stepan Bandera and that hateful ideology, that odious ideology that supported the Nazi regime back in 1930s and 40s. Russia is never going to allow that to exist as a festering wound. Western Ukraine isn't going to exist as a standalone entity, a festering wound. They're not going to turn it over to the Poles because Belarus won't allow that. Western Ukraine is going to be occupied by Belarus. That's what's going to happen.
Okay, so Poland acquiring nuclear weapons on its territory. Let's say that happens. What happens after that?
Well, first of all, it can't happen. NATO doesn't have nuclear weapons. So NATO can't decide, let's just transfer nuclear weapons over to Poland. The nuclear weapons that exist under the NATO umbrella are owned either as the national nuclear deterrent of France and Great Britain, or a limited number of nuclear weapons that the United States has deployed into Europe per an agreement with NATO as an organization, 30 nations, that these weapons exist and the conditions under which these weapons can be turned over to qualified aircraft of qualified nations who have entered into a nuclear sharing agreement with NATO and the United States. Poland is not part of this agreement. In order to get Poland into the agreement, this entire nuclear structure would have to be opened up for renegotiation within the 30 nations. I pretty much guarantee you that there are many of the 30 that will just say no, hell no. So for these weapons now to appear in Poland would require the United States to enter into a bilateral relationship with Poland, where the United States unilaterally determined that it was going to put nuclear weapons on Polish soil. And if they did that, that would destroy NATO integrity. It would, NATO would be totally opposed to that because it undermines everything that NATO had sought to achieve by creating this limited nuclear umbrella. I don't see the United States doing that. In fact, the United States has said straight up, that isn't going to happen. I know there was some talk during the Trump administration where you had the ambassador to Germany and the U.S. ambassador to Poland making statements about, well, if Germany didn't want nuclear weapons, we could send those nuclear weapons to Poland. But it's not an American decision. Those weapons belong to NATO, even though they're under American control. They're allocated to NATO and, specifically designated NATO resources. So Poland is not going to acquire nuclear weapons. That might be a Polish fantasy, but it would be literally a suicide pill.
Okay.
Already the discussion of nuclear weapons has it, you know, for instance, NATO did make a statement back in earlier this year that the F-35 is a nuclear capable aircraft, the F-35A model that's being exported to NATO countries. And I believe Poland is in the market to buy some of these.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So is Finland, by the way. And NATO has said that all F-35A aircraft should be considered to be nuclear capable, meaning that if NATO decided that they could be used to carry nuclear bombs, and that's the closest Poland's going to get to having a nuclear weapon, meaning that in a time of war, Polish aircraft could be called upon to deploy B-61 free-fall bombs using their F-35A aircraft. And Russia has said, this is insanity. And if you do this, we will put nuclear weapons in, and I think that's the direction we're heading. I think Russia is preparing to deploy nuclear weapons onto Belarus soil.
That's what I want to ask you. Yes. Yeah. So you see that this is the direction they are taking.
It's going to happen. Thank you, NATO.
And then what, Scott?
Well, then everybody in Europe gets to have the thrill of waking up, going to sleep at night, not knowing if they're going to wake up in the morning. All the work that I did, and you know, this is sort of personal, because I was part of a treaty that got rid of these weapons. I mean, I don't ask much, but hey, Europe, why don't you thank me and thank everybody else who sacrificed a whole bunch to make sure you could go to sleep at night, not worrying about nuclear weapons range. We got rid of the intermediate nuclear force weapons, the short range ballistic missiles that threatened your very existence. We got rid of them. You should thank us. Instead, what are you doing? You're turning your back on history. You're disrespecting those who did their best to make the world a safer place by creating the conditions where these weapons are going to be brought back, and Europe once again is going to be under the umbrella of doom. We got lucky in the 1980s. There were many occasions where Europe should have disappeared off the face of the earth. You know, there were accidental detections of launch, brave Soviet officers who refused didn't follow their orders and held on because they said, nah, this doesn't seem right. And they were right. But had they done what they were ordered to do, there could have been a potential for a nuclear launch. Missiles going up, to test the atmosphere, but the Russians thought it was a preemptive nuclear strike. Able Archer 83, where the Russians thought the NATO was getting ready to launch a preemptive strike. We got lucky. We got out of it because of people like me. I'm not saying I'm great. I'm not. I'm just a dumb Marine. But there's people like me who went out there and sacrificed a whole bunch to go out there and do what needed to be done to get rid of these weapons. And now Europe's right back to square one. You know, and at some point in time, I mean, because the consequences are so dire, you can't say, I don't care anymore. You got to care, because if Europe goes, the world goes. But Europe, I'm sick of you already. I really am sick of you. You guys are so stupid. Learn your history. We saved you once. We saved you a couple times, but we saved you from the threat of imminent nuclear destruction. And what have you done? You've done nothing more than recreate the conditions for these nuclear weapons to reemerge. You know, is Russia to blame? Of course, anybody with nuclear weapons has a role to play. But you can't condemn Russia for responding to the irresponsible actions of NATO. All Russia wants is a European security framework that includes a revived intermediate nuclear forces treaty. Russia wants to get rid of these weapons. Russia wants this treaty to be in place. Russia wants to have a mutually a verifiable disarmament mechanism. It's NATO and the United States that don't want it. And again, I mean, if it was just a matter of letting you stew in your own juices, I don't care anymore. I really don't. I used to, but I don't care about Europe anymore. But the problem is the consequences of your little self-stew is the end of the world. Now I care. You know, so when people say, oh, man, you're pro-Russian. No, I'm not. I'm pro-American. But when my country is behaving as irresponsibly as a nation of our stature can possibly behave, you have to look to the countries that are behaving responsibly. And right now, Russia is the only mature actor there. I'm not sitting here saying, go, Russia, dominate the world. What I'm saying is, hey, Russia wants to actually disarm. Russia actually wants to create a framework of security that brings peace and stability to the region. It's the United States together with NATO that's trying to upend the cart and ruin everything for everybody. But no, this is a horrible period of time in history. A horrible period of time in history, because we're undoing everything that had been done for the past 30 years to ensure this would never happen again. It's happening as we speak. Europe is going to once again fall under the umbrella of imminent nuclear doom. And it's not a joke. It's real. And it can happen instantaneously.
So isn't the decision-making center in Pentagon? And don't you think if it comes to, which I pray to God it won't, that there is any nuclear weapon used from the West, collective West side, Russia will, as they said, direct their weapons on the decision-making centers. So that will go to United States.
Well, first of all, the decision-making centers, Russia's talking about conventional weapons. When Russia says we're going to hit decision-making centers, they're talking about using the Kinzhal, hypersonic weapons, non-nuclear weapons. There's a lot Russia can do before they go nuclear. You know, they're not a pathetic power. They're actually a very capable power who's developed extremely modern, effective non-nuclear weapon systems that can be employed. But here's the thing. Once a single nuclear weapon is used, Russia will blow everything up. Because there's no such thing as a limited nuclear war in Russia's mindset. The West, we've mirror imaged onto Russia. We keep talking about the Russians have a doctrine of escalate to de-escalate, that the Russians will seek to use a nuclear weapon to escalate the conflict, intimidating us to de-escalate. So we need to be prepared to escalate first, use nuclear weapons first, and get the Russians to back down. I would just say read Russian doctrine. If we use nuclear weapons, we might as well get drunk, sit out in the backyard and wait for the big 200,000 or degree suntan, because it's going to go boom. The flash is going to hit us and we're going to die. Russia doesn't play games. Nuclear deterrence means that you have to convince your opponent that the consequences of using nuclear weapons are so dire that you would never consider using nuclear weapons. But in order for that to work, you have to be serious about doing it. Russia is serious that if nuclear weapons are used against it, it will terminate all life on Earth. All life. All life's going to end. But Putin has said, we will go to heaven as martyrs. You will go wherever people who start wars go. Russia's not going to start a nuclear war, but Russia's going to end it. Not to win, but to destroy the world. That's what nuclear deterrence is about. If you believe that Russia's not serious about this, that Russia would back down, then Russia's not deterring anything. And the West needs to wake up to the fact that there can be no talk about using nuclear weapons. And fortunately, I mean, I don't have a lot of respect for people in the Pentagon, but I will say this. When Mark Milley, who's the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, was questioned about the Trump period, about at the end of the Trump era, when President Trump was deemed by some to have gone off the rails and, had lost, the ability for rational thinking. And some people thought in order to preserve his presidency, he might do something crazy like order a nuclear strike. The answer that Mark Milley gave to that question was heartwarming. He said, there's a lot that has to go on for a nuclear strike to take place. And, it has to be a lawful order. And just because the president says to launch doesn't mean it's a lawful order. We have to look at the cause. What is the military necessity of this? Does the launch meet our doctrinal requirements? Meaning, has something occurred for us to need to use a nuclear weapon? And if it's just the president waking up saying, I want to launch a nuke, then that doesn't meet our doctrine, and we don't do it. We also have to talk about proportionality, meaning, are there other means short of nuclear weapons to respond to whatever threat has occurred? Is a use of a nuclear weapon disproportional to the threat that has manifested itself? There's just a whole bunch of questions that have to be asked and answered throughout the chain of command. It's the duty and responsibility from everybody in the nuclear chain of command ask these questions. And if they're not answered to your satisfaction, not to execute the order, because it is an unlawful order with horrific consequences. Look, American military officers are professionals. And while all of them want to go home to their wives and their children, those who have assumed the mantle of nuclear guardian, so to speak, will, if called upon, execute their responsibility, which means they will launch the nuclear weapons if the conditions have been met. But if the conditions haven't been met, they're not just simply going to do something because a madman tells them to do it. So that gives me hope that we won't see some stupidity. For instance, that's why I'm convinced there won't be a preemptive NATO strike, because it's not in the doctrine, and the B-61 bombs belong to us. So those weapons are never leaving their storage right now. There may be one weapon coming out where teams go through a check. I don't want to get into it too much, but the operational check to make sure that they can make the weapon ready for war and demonstrate they know how to do that. But there's not going to be a release of the weapons. Every weapon put on the aircraft will be a dummy weapon. There's just no way that an American officer would do this. Now, here's the problem. I don't trust the Poles. No disrespect. But the Poles are insane. They're crazy. They're like the Ukrainians, just absolutely bonkers. That's why they can never be entrusted with nuclear weapons. Because if you give the Poles a nuclear bomb and you give them the ability to launch it when they want to launch it, they wouldn't launch it because they're stupid. They're insane. They're crazy. I don't trust them. I don't trust a lot of nations anymore. But right now, I do trust the United States and when it comes to nuclear weapons, because even President Biden has said repeatedly, we don't want that. That's not what we want. We're not heading in that direction. We don't want to go in that direction. We don't want to talk about nuclear conflict. So that's the optimism I have.
Thank you, Scott. I really, being here, and I can see how they are dragging Poland into this conflict that will be much more escalated before the end of this year, I believe it. And I'm fully aware of it. But I want to ask you a question about something I came across, because you actually are the best person to ask this question. I don't know if this is legit, if this is fact, or it's just some stupid information I came across. But is it true that if there is a nuclear explosion, computers actually can withstand that? So like artificial intelligence survives, but not the man. Is it true?
First of all, I don't think artificial intelligence is to that level yet. There's we don't have independent artificial intelligence capability. I'll get into that in a second. Electromagnetic pulse is what we're talking about when a nuclear weapon goes off. It generates what's called an EMP, electromagnetic pulse, which will literally shut down power grids, shut down electricity, fry components. If you're in an aircraft and your aircraft hasn't been hardened against EMP, your circuits will fry and you could lose control of the aircraft. If you have missiles that haven't been hardened, the electrical components could fry and the missile could self-destruct or lose control and all this stuff. So the military has, over the years, they try to harden their systems to resist EMP, electromagnetic pulse. I mean, if you're right next to a nuclear weapon, it doesn't matter what the EMP effect is. You're going to get killed by the heat blast. But so, yes, there are military equipment that is hardened And some of this equipment is computer related. You have computers that have been hardened to this. And then if you have effective connectivity, underground cables and stuff that connect EMP hardened computers with other EMP hardened computers, and as long as they have power, you know, you could have connectivity. Where does this come into play? Russia has something called the dead hand perimeter. The dead hand is a system that the Russians bought into when the United States started employing Trident submarines with Trident missiles that are very, very accurate. And the when I say Trident submarines, they're Ohio-class submarines, but they're Trident missiles. And the Americans could bring these very quiet submarines very close to the Russian coast. And then if they fired the Trident missile on a flat trajectory, not a high ballistic, but a flat trajectory, they could reach targets in Russia very quickly with pinpoint precision, with multiple warheads. And there was a fear in Russia that if the United States fired enough of these, that they could destroy enough of Russia's nuclear capability that when combined with effective missile defense, Russia no longer had a nuclear deterrence, because the United States could believe that they could destroy most of Russia's arsenal, and whatever Russia fired would be shot down by our missile defense, and that America could emerge from a nuclear war the victor, having survived it. So the Russians, again, believing in nuclear deterrence, came up with a system that it's not so much artificial intelligence, a very simple system. It's one that has radiation detectors all around strategic areas in Russia. And these radiation detectors are linked by underground cable, and a computer monitors this. So anytime you get a radiation spike, the computer thinks nuclear attack. The other thing is there's commands coming from Russian command centers continuously. They're just sent continuously. And when the commands stop, the computer says, oh, the command center has been bombed, made ineffective. There's no longer effective command and control. Then there's seismic detectors. So if a nuclear weapon hits, you'll shake. And the seismic, and there might be some other sensors in there as well. But all of these come together into a system that is supposed to have men there. And the men are monitoring and all that. And if all the things come into hand, they'll hit the button. And the button sends these missiles that then fire up, and the missiles, instead of having a warhead, have a communications package. These missiles fly across the landscape of Russia, broadcasting the launch codes. And all Russian missiles that have survived the attack will launch automatically. It's called the dead hand. And it can happen even if there's no people. If there's no people, it'll still happen. That should scare the living beep out of people. I mean, that's the kind of doomsday scenario that just should scare everybody. But nobody takes it seriously, except the Russians. You know, the Russians have spent a lot of money putting this in place. But there are still people in the United States that believe that we can win a nuclear war. Now, fortunately, our political leadership doesn't share their thoughts. But there are, you know, these jackals who carry out war games. And they just war game it out. And they, you know, well, we're 350 million people. If we have our genetic, resilience is such that if we have 100 million people survive, we constitute the genetic makeup of the American nation and win. Well, wait a minute. That just means you just wrote off 250 million people. Yeah. Who does that? No sane person does it, but we have these kind of jackals that live in that strategic world that actually play these war games out like that. And unfortunately, they're very influential in strategic nuclear warfare, and or at least they used to be. And they're coming back now because we're, you know, how do you empower a nuclear jackal? Build more nuclear weapons. Give him more toys to play with. And the more toys he has, the more he's going to think how we can win. This is why it's never a good idea to build up your nuclear arsenal. It's always a good idea to build down your nuclear arsenal, hopefully to zero, where we don't have these weapons of insanity ever again. So these jackals will never be able to come up with some mind-boggling scenario that makes you think that killing 250 million of your own people, not to mention the billions you're going to kill on the other side, is a good thing. That's not a good outcome. I mean, people who think like this are worse than Adolf Hitler, because they're same.
But as long as those weapons exist, there will always be situation like of, yeah.
Yeah. And as long as those people exist, you know, technology is its own demon. Like I said, I don't think artificial intelligence is at the point where a computer can take over the world. But I am concerned about the perimeter system. A computer is only as good as what you put in it. And if you tell a computer to do certain things, but you didn't think through all the ramifications and parameters and permeations, a scenario can happen that causes things to happen that were unforeseen. And when we're dealing with nuclear weapons, that's never a good idea. We need to be absolutely certain about every aspect of this. And the best way to be certain is to get rid of the damn weapons. But yeah. I'm preaching to the choir here, so.
Yeah. Scott, one last quick question before we end today. If you can give me and the audience your prediction before the end of this year, how do you see this situation going? Is there more escalation with Ukraine? Poland gets involved. Belarus is also part from the other side. In your sense and your expertise and following the events, how do you see this? Is there really any threat that can come from NATO that people should be aware of? How much harm they can do?
Well, NATO can do a lot of harm just by being NATO. I don't mean to be too facetious, but what happened to Nord Stream 2? What happened to Nord Stream 1? NATO knows what happened. They may not have been.
Sorry to interrupt you. I try not to, but do you think there will be more pipelines, like the one with Turkey, I believe, and then there's another? Yep. Do you think there will be more?
There's already been, Russia has said straight up, the Turk Stream, people have tried to attack Turk Stream. The Turks are doing their best to try and protect it, but pipelines are very vulnerable. We know who did Nord Stream 2. I'll just say it straight up. The United States of America did it. They probably did it with Polish connivance. The helicopters, U.S. helicopters that flew over the exact area where these attacks took place on September 25th and 26th, the days of the attack, flew out of Poland. They flew out of Poland. Your question is there anything that NATO? Yeah, NATO's already doing it. NATO is at war with itself. This was an attack against Germany, not Russia. This was an attack against Europe, not Russia. This was the United States and Poland conspiring to do harm to Europe. If Europe was smart, they'd isolate Poland, invade Poland, get rid of that government. Seriously, the United States is not the friend of Europe. We used to be the friend of Europe. We're not. The United States is destroying Europe. If Europe can't see that America's policies are destroying you as you speak, all the harm that's come to you is because of the United States, not Russia. But they're unable or unwilling to see that. What's going to happen? Russia has, I believe, made a decision to win this conflict. That there's no more, even though they call it a special military operation, there's no more special military operation. The gloves have come off. It's just a straight out military operation. It's war. And they're attacking Ukraine as you would a nation you were at war with. They're trying to shut down electrical power generation capability to disrupt, transportation, to disrupt communications. I believe soon they're going to go after the leadership. It's war. And as they do this, they're also going to continue the pressure on the Ukrainian military on the front lines. Bombardments, limited attacks, things of that nature. While they accumulate the military power needed to finish the job. And, many of these units aren't going to be ready, that Russia's mobilized, aren't going to be ready until December. It takes that long to train them. Other units have already shown up. Troops have come. There's already mobilized troops on the ground solidifying the Russian lines. That's why it's just a pipe dream for anybody in Ukraine to go, we'll continue the attack. You know, man, again, history. The battle for Moscow, you know, the Russians hit General Mudd in October, and then in November, the ground froze, and the Germans said, we're going to make one last push for Moscow. They put everything they had in it. But at the end, they were 12 kilometers short of Moscow. They could see the Kremlin from their binoculars, but they had nothing left. They had just expended it all. And then the Russians pushed them back. Ukraine has nothing left. I don't like to use the Moscow scenario because Ukraine hasn't come close to achieving that. I use the American Civil War scenario, the Battle of Gettysburg, day three. Longstreet lines up his corps, and they launch the attack against the Union center in hopes that they can somehow break through and destroy the Union army, win the day for the Confederacy. And they put everything into it. Pickett's Charge, they called it. Pickett was a brigade commander. And sure enough, the Confederates fought their way through. They breached a little gap in the Union line, and there was a moment, one moment, where the Confederate flag was waving as if they had won the battle. They hadn't, because they had nothing left. And the Union counterattacked, pushed them back, sealed it off, and they retreated. And from that moment on, the Confederacy never again had a chance of winning the war. That battle took place in July of 1863. The war didn't end until April 1865 at Appomattox. There was a lot of time between 1863 and 1865, and a lot of people died, but never again did the South threaten the North. It was always known from that moment that the North had won. When Ukraine launched this attack against Russia and Kherson and Kharkov, that's their high water mark. That's their Pickett's Charge. That's as good as it's going to get. Never going to get that good again. Ukraine is lost. They don't have resources. NATO can't supply them quick enough with enough equipment. NATO's getting exhausted. Europe's getting bankrupt. It's over. Meanwhile, Russia's just getting stronger and stronger and stronger. What's going to happen between now and December? Russia, I believe, is going to continue some variation of a strategic air campaign designed to destroy Ukrainian infrastructure, to inhibit Ukraine's ability to wage conflict, and also, frankly speaking, to break the spirit of the Ukrainian people when it comes to sustaining this conflict. You know, in the summer, there were Ukrainians having parties. They were going to restaurants. Yes. They were living life. You know, those days are over. Ukraine, wake up. You're at war now. You wanted it. You got it, baby. And Russia's going to support on. And then when the time comes, Russia's going to launch the ground attack, and Ukraine's not going to be able to resist it. Now, what's Poland going to do during this period of time? Poland's desperate. Because Poland made a gamble. The world hasn't woken up to it, but everybody in the know knows. Tens of thousands of Polish troops are on Ukrainian soil fighting against Russia. Russia knows it because they got the bodies. They know who these guys are. They're killing them, slaughtering them. But these Poles are there. And I'll say this, the Russians, when they talk about it, the frontline commanders say, hey, the Ukrainians, top-notch troops, fighters. Poles, they're pretty good too. So they're not disrespectful of the Poles. They acknowledge that the Poles came to fight. But they're also dying. They can't win this battle. What does Poland do? Double down? I mean, at some point in time, it gets ridiculous. I mean, it's already ridiculous from the Russian perspective because they know damn well what's happening. But from the rest of the world, at some point in time, you can't hide it anymore. Now, do you allow tens of thousands of your troops to go off and be slaughtered and do nothing about it, except that you lost? No. Most gamblers, when they lose, they double down. Go to a blackjack table. You'll see it. You know, $50 on there. Oh, I lost the hand. Put $100 on. Oh, I lost it. Put $300 on. I need $600. You know, and at some point in time, you run out of money. Poland is going to, I believe, double down because they're stupid, frankly speaking. Polish leadership is stupid, ignorant. They're going to double down, and they're going to continue to double down until they compel Belarus to respond. Now, when is this response going to take place? Whenever Belarus and Russia determine that it needs to take place. But they cannot allow Poland to create a fait accompli, to create a situation where Poland now has 60,000 troops in Western Ukraine disguised as Ukrainian troops. And then overnight, boom, they put on the Polish patch and say, we're Polish soldiers now. They can't allow that to happen. It's already a dangerous situation. There's already too many Polish troops in Ukraine already. It makes Belarus very uncomfortable. That's why they're doing what they're doing. And if Poland doesn't back off, they're going to find themselves in a situation where Belarus soldiers are coming down and Russia is going to treat them as an extension of Russia. So any attempt to fight them means you're fighting Russia. And now we have another, an escalation that yes. could have been avoided. So
yes.
that's the direction I'm thinking that's the new face of this war, because Russia is defeating yep. Ukraine. New face of the war is Poland being suicidally stupid by putting Polish troops into Western Ukraine in some sort of gambit to acquire Western Ukraine. And it's just not going to happen. Not going to happen.
Yeah. And before we end, I just want to add my few cents here. I see this as a Polish person who absolutely is against this. Okay. I'm not for this government at all. It's not Polish government to me. I see this as a stupidity is one thing, but also manipulation, it's another thing. And who will pay the price is the citizens. If this happens, I hope not, but I see this is heading that way. And I am very serious about it, actually. I see this. It's not a joke at all. You know, people minimize this and they, of course, think it's not going to happen. It's very, very possible that in order to escalate this situation in Ukraine, that will be already past tense story, we will take another country and continue from another side. So, yeah. Thank you for today, Scott. Not easy topics, but I think it's important for people to know what's really going on.
Well, can I say something? Because yes. you look very depressed. And
we don't want to
end it on. Look, we live in a dangerous time. There's no doubt about it. We just had a conversation where there was virtually nothing positive to talk about. But the fact is, at the end of the day, if there's going to be a solution, the solution is going to come from the people. Yeah. And the people, need to be informed. And I think what you're doing here by having this kind of conversation is invaluable to that effort. So I know you're in a difficult position. I know that, things aren't great. And I know it seems like a bleak future, but understand that if there's any hope to get out of this, it's because of people like you, who encourage the kind of debate, discussion, and dialogue that's absolute necessity for the people of the world, of Poland, Germany, the United States, to be empowered with the kind of knowledge that allows them to overcome the ignorance that's fear-generated and stop being manipulated. Start doing things that are in the benefit of the Polish people, of the European people, of humanity. So I thank you for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Scott. And, I always say my last question, but actually I have one more question now because of what you just said. I appreciate this. So, yeah, I'm sorry, but this is a personal question, kind of. So they have recently changed the law in Poland. Again, everything is timing about people being recruited to the army to fight, to defend the country. I'm talking about women, age group from 18 years old up to 60 years old. Of course, there are some exceptions and some, exclusions. But question is this. Let's say they ask me to join, which I believe it won't happen. I won't be even here. But let's say that happens and I say no. What happens to someone like that?
Well, I don't know Polish law. Generally speaking, there's criminal penalties that are attached to that, that include imprisonment, and then a perpetual status as a felon, which means you would have difficulty getting employment, etc. That's the case in the United States. We had a situation in the Vietnam War where, literally tens of thousands of American men, otherwise patriotic men, they just disagreed with the Vietnam War. They didn't want to get drafted, didn't want to serve. And they, some of them fled to Canada. Some just stayed home and paid the consequence. But it was so many, in fact, that at one point in time, I believe under President Jimmy Carter, we pardoned them because the implications of condemning so many otherwise law-abiding American citizens to the penalties was just wrong, the wrong thing to do. But the fact is, you know, a government can't exist if at the end of the day, it loses the ability to mobilize the nation in defense of the country in a time of conflict. You know, but that doesn't do you any good. You know, you have to vote your consciousness. You have to understand the you know, be fully aware of the ramifications of that decision, and ask yourself, can you live with that decision? You know, can you live with being imprisoned and then being treated as a pariah? Because once you have felon status, you can't move to other countries. They don't care what your crime was. They just look and say, you have a crime. You know, and then what are the, what, on the other hand, what would happen if you said, yes, I'll serve? You could die, or you could be called upon to do things in a cause that you, because, you know, it's not that Poland's being invaded. You'll probably be asked to support the invasion of Western Ukraine. And you would do things that you're in opposition to. It's, you know, it's Hobson's choice, the horns of a dilemma, whatever you want to say. It's a horrible position to be in.
We are not at this point yet. So it was just hypothetical.
Yeah, I would say that it would take an awful lot for Poland to start mobilizing 60-year-old women. They'd have to be getting their butts kicked pretty bad to do that. But, you know, the fact that they passed a law that gives them that potential is disconcerting. Yeah.
Thank you, Scott. Let's hope it doesn't come to that. No. Where people can find you, can you tell my audience again, on Telegram?
I am still, I'm just a Telegram kind of guy. I think it's just Scott Ritter at Telegram. I have a Telegram page where I post things, and then I opened up a chat room, they call it, or a chat. It's a separate page where people can come in and discuss what I've written. And I encourage it, including people who disagree with me. I have no problem with disagreements. I would ask that you don't make it personal. If you disagree with me, you don't come in and call me a, you know, big fat. I get a little insulted when people call me fat. It hurts. You know, stupid. You can call me stupid. But what I would prefer is if you say, hey, you said this on, for instance, on your show, but I disagree. And this is why I disagree. I'll say, wow, okay. And I'll come back with a response, say, well, you're right here. I was wrong. I'll correct it next time. But here, this is why I said. Then the response, and man, debate, dialogue, discussion, people get stronger by it, me included. So if anybody wants to participate in that kind of interaction, please join the Telegram channel and let's go for it.
Yes. And also Scott's books, you will find down below this video in the link. So you can click on it and purchase Scott's book.
Buy my books. The holiday season is coming up. Buy a lot of books. Give them away as gifts.
Especially in this current situation with the nuclear.
Well, then, I know we're promoting the disarmament in time of perestroika book, which everybody, I believe, should read. But I wrote a book before that that's actually more relevant, called Scorpion. It's a history of America's nuclear addiction to nuclear weapons, from FDR to Donald Trump. And it's a book that, you know, I'm very proud of. It's sort of like the Bible of
I will attach this down below so people can just click on this link and find it. Thank you so much again for coming back on my channel and explaining a lot of things, and I'm learning again so much, and I'm not depressed. I was just very focused on what you were saying. I know we will get through this. It won't be easy, but we will get through this. So thank you again.
100 gram vodka.
What is this?
100 grams of vodka and a good night's sleep, and you'll be better in the morning.
Well, that's not for me, but maybe for some. Yes,
for some people.
Go for it, everyone, if you want to. Like, not for me. Thank you for watching.
Okay.